This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. Two guests this episode, two very, very prominent people when it comes to the College Football National Championship, which features Michigan versus Washington, Monday, January 8th. You'll be listening to that today, 7:30 p.m. on ESPN. Our guests are Bill Bunnell, who is a coordinating producer for ESPN and has worked in sports broadcasting for four decades. He is the main or lead producer on the Michigan-Washington game. He has been ESPN's lead college football producer for many, many years. He is he's in the production truck when Kirk Herbstreit and Chris Fowler are on for ABC's Saturday Night Football. Should add Holly Rowe in there as well. And Bill has done every college football playoff national championship game since 2014. He is joined by Jimmy Platt. Jimmy Platt is the lead director for the Michigan-Washington National College Football Championship. His experience includes directing Monday Night Football for four seasons, directed a lot of NFL, men's and women's college basketball, MLB. This is his debut for a national college football championship. And we went behind the scenes just in terms of what their jobs are, what makes this game unique for a production crew like themselves, how having additional equipment such as cameras changes the equation for these guys, how they decide on crowd shots or when not to decide on crowd shots, and how they define success or how they will define success for a broadcast. So a little something behind the scenes for you on this episode. Bill Bunnell and Jimmy Platt, the producer and director of the national championship game in college football. All right, as I said at the top, very excited to have these two gentlemen as guests. I like these kind of podcasts. Obviously, I talk to a lot of on-air people, but when I can speak to producers and directors and editors, I usually end up learning something, which to me makes this podcast at least interesting for me. Bill Bunnell is a coordinating producer for ESPN, and he has worked in sports and entertainment television for four decades. He's currently the lead college football producer who has oversight of ABC's Saturday Night Football and the College Football Playoff National Championships. Bill has produced Saturday Night Football with Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit since 2006. He's done every college football playoff national championship since 2014. So really, almost nobody else on earth in terms of production who knows more about putting on a college football national championship than Bill Bunnell. Jimmy Platt is the lead director for ESPN's college football. He will be in the production truck with Bill coming Monday night. His experience includes directing four seasons of ESPN's Monday Night Football. He's been on the NFL, college football, men's and women's college basketball, MLB and lacrosse. He can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this may be the first college football championship he has directed. They are here because it is number one Michigan versus number two Washington, Monday, January 8th at 7:30 p.m. ET on ESPN. There's obviously a lot of mega cast options as well. I am almost out of breath, Jimmy and Bill, and I am pleased that you are joining me on the Sports Media Podcast. Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks, Richard. It's great to be here with you.
Jimmy, was I correct that this will be your first national championship that you're directing?
The first one.
Okay.
Yep, on the football side.
All right. So before I get to sort of my big picture questions, you know, it's rare, right, for someone who's had your kind of career to have a first of this kind of magnitude. You've obviously directed significant sporting events before, but like, is it nervous? Is it anxiousness? Is it a combination of all things? Because, you know, this is pretty cool. You now enter rarefied air as one of the very few people sort of on this planet who's directed the National College Football Championship for, you know, the major media rights holder.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly humbling when you reflect back and look at, you know, where you've come from along your career lines. I wouldn't really say there's nerves or anything like that, because quite frankly, if you don't get nerves going into just the week two football game you do before the ball gets in the air, you know, you're probably not in the right frame of mind. And I wouldn't say nerves so much that you're worried about what's going to happen. Just you're excited for the work you've done all week to prepare yourself to execute when the ball is kicked in the air. To me, the most stressful part of the job is always the preparation. The execution part is the fun part. So that just makes it super enjoyable. And I really look forward to that. So you have that little anticipation buildup. But once the ball is in the air, you're just doing what you've done for so long. You just go back to, you know, those things and the fundamentals that got you there.
One of the things is, you know, that Jimmy said is preparation. You know, for big games like this or any game during the regular season, you know, when you're prepared and you know you're ready to go in and do the game, there's no nerves involved. It's just execution at that point. And you know that you've done everything you can to prepare for the game and to put the best broadcast on possible. And nobody prepares better than Jimmy. I mean, I sat next to him all season long, and I'm really thrilled to be doing this game with Jimmy on Monday night.
All right, Bill, I want to stick with you. This is a very broad question, so take as much time as you want to answer it. What is unique about producing a national championship college football game?
Well, unique. It's I would say, you know, it's really like the Super Bowl of college football in that, you know, it's really the you know, the championship. It's really all about the players and the teams and the fact that they get a chance to play for a national championship. One game, you know, 60 minutes, two teams that have prepared all season long. And, you know, that's, you know, we haven't always had that for college football. It's always been, you know, different the last 10 years we have. But, you know, I think that's what's unique about it, is that now it's one game for all the marbles. You know, it's like, that to me is, you know, and it's about the players and the teams and the coaches and all that.
Bill, are things different from your preparation for this game versus like a week three game, whether it's something that you do, whether it's how you run meetings with people, whether it's the directions that you give? What is different, if there is something different or many things different?
Yeah, that's a great question, Richard. Yeah. You know, as I told Jimmy, because this is the first season we're working with each other, you know, I you know, for one thing, I'm like Bill Parcells. I mean, I'm so superstitious about everything and all that. So I do not like to break routine. I want to keep everything the same. So basically, I keep the same schedule as if we're doing a week three game during the regular season. You know, we, you know, meet, you know, have our typical meeting with Kirk Herbstreit, you know, leading up to the game. We have a meeting with Chris Fowler. You know, we, you know, meet with the teams. We go to practice. We meet with the teams. I have the same exact meeting that we have on Saturday Night Football. So on Monday at 10 a.m., we're all going to gather in the hotel, have our hour meeting, and then leave for the stadium. So really do not break routine at all. I'm a stickler about that.
And that's the number one thing, because I'm the same way. Like, if you get out of your routine and think of this as anything different, you're just going to not do the job you've been doing all season long. And really, yes, there's more volume, there's more things, but you can't make those more things take you away from the importance, which is the fundamentals of, you know, what you have to put on the air. So you got to stay within rhythm in that regard. He and I both see it that way, which has been great.
We'll get to some of the things that are different, obviously, including more cameras and things like that. But Bill, let me go back to you real quick. So you mentioned that you'll have a meeting day of the broadcast. What would happen for some of my listeners, obviously, who have never been in a production meeting or never probably will enter like a broadcast truck. What happens at that meeting? What exists at that meeting at 10 o'clock prior to, you know, your 7:30 broadcast?
You know, basically, you know, the very first thing I'll do is I'll go through the schedule of the day, make sure everybody's clear on where they need to be, what time they need to be. Then I'll go through the opening format, you know, from our opening tees with John Williams. We're having John Williams using his music of Grit and Glory again this year with a little bit of a NASA twist because we're in Houston. But we're really looking forward to seeing that again. But, you know, I'll go through the whole open from very beginning to, you know, to the end and go through all that. I'll go through halftime. I'll go through post game. Then normally we'll look at all the elements, all the tape roll-ins that we have and stuff like that. Then I throw it to Herbie because, you know, that's the most important part for him to kind of give us his final thoughts on his preparation for the game and what he's looking for in the game. And then I'll end the meeting with how I end every national championship game, that something unexpected will happen. I always tell everybody, you know, in these big games, you know, going in, you can prepare like we prepare so thoroughly every time, but there's always something unexpected that will happen in the game that we're not prepared for. And it's how you react to that, which, you know, leads us to a successful broadcast. And I always put that in everybody's head because I just, you know, want everybody to know that, you know, when something happens, you got to roll with it and you have to do your job to make it a successful outcome. So
that's I appreciate that. That's detailed and interesting. Let me go to you, Jimmy. I think enough people certainly who've read me have a sense that, like, okay, the access that the main broadcaster has is they get time at practice, so they're able to sort of see the teams. There's production meetings with both teams, usually the head coach and selected players. So let's sort of get into that production meeting. How many people, like, will you meet on the Michigan side? How many people will you meet on the Washington side? And, like, does the broadcast have the ability to, like, request certain, let's say, players, as opposed to the universities providing you certain players?
Yeah, I mean, generally, we're always going to speak with each head coach, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator. And then from there, we request a starting quarterback and usually like the star defensive player of that team. And usually Bill couches it with the SIDs. Hey, give me the kid that's the most well-spoken or best leader or has a little interesting background that we can weave throughout the broadcast.
Bill, I have spoken to many of your equivalents over the years, whether it's, you know, the NFL or pro basketball or college football, et cetera. And the production meetings to me are really, really fascinating because there are some coaches and players who will give you everything and then others who are a little more circumspect. A lot of this has to do with the relationship between the lead analyst and, like, that team or that coach, you know, like for example, Romo has a great relationship with Bill Belichick, so he probably is going to get more than, let's say, another analyst who's never met Bill. I'm sure Troy Aikman and Joe Buck have great relationships with certain coaches, et cetera, et cetera. So for this particular broadcast, how would you assess the forwardness of Jim Harbaugh and Kellen DeBoer? I don't know if you've had Washington, Bill. Maybe you've had them a little bit. I'm sensing that at least this group over the years has had Michigan at least. So what's your expectation or what have they been in the past, Bill, if you can provide some insight on that?
Yeah, so we've done several Michigan games in the past when we had the Big Ten, obviously, with Chris and Herbie. We ended up doing, this will be our fifth game with Washington this year. So,
yep.
You know, Jimmy and I always kid around that we're kind of like the home team broadcasters for Washington. We've done so many games. So from a matchup standpoint, it couldn't have worked out better since, you know, we had just got off doing Michigan in the Rose Bowl and we've had Washington quite a few times, including the Pac-12 championship. But to answer your question, I mean, you know, to me, Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit are the face and the voice of college football. And, you know, Herbie has tremendous relationships with everybody, and including Jim Harbaugh. So, you know, Jim's very forthright with us. I mean, you know, we've known Jim for years. There's no issue. We sit down and talked with him before the Rose Bowl. Kalen DeBoer, you know, it's interesting because he's, you know, fairly new, second season at Washington and everything. But as you said, you know, we've done several games with him. He's just a, you know, just a great guy. I mean, he's, you know, really, really turned that program in Washington into a, you know, a national championship contender. So we have nothing but, you know, great relationships with both teams, and really excited to get in there on Sunday and talk with both of them.
Who's a player, Bill, on both those sides who you really enjoyed, or at least is really, really good, like in terms of sort of
media-friendly? I'm going to start with Washington. I mean, Penix is what a great story he is. You know, coming from Indiana, all the injuries he's had coming back from that, and just playing lights out the way he has. His deep ball accuracy, his passing, his, you know, running the team. But, you know, I got to tell you, the guy that really popped out for me this season is Dylan Johnson. And the fact that his, you know, he had that right foot injury versus Texas, I think is going to be crucial in this game, whether or not he can play to full tilt, because, you know, Washington uses that run game so that Penix can go downfield, you know, to those deep receivers and stuff. And, you know, I just think Dylan is a really, really key part of the game for Washington. I really do. On the other side of the ball, you know, I think JJ is, yeah, what we talked to him before the Rose Bowl. Gosh, what a great guy. I mean, you just really want to root for him. Just really, really a great leader. We had video of him meditating before the Rose Bowl game. He's really locked in to the game, and a great leader. Can tell he's a great leader, and you can tell that he and Harbaugh have a wonderful relationship, and you know, very close. And just seeing those shots after the Rose Bowl, and then of course Jim calling him the greatest quarterback in Michigan history. You know, I really like both teams, and the players are just, oh, you know, the players on both teams are just really, you really want to root for them.
No, it's big, big, big praise there by Harbaugh. If you go back in the history of Michigan quarterbacks, I say you can go back to the 30s and 40s, Jim.
I even think Brady backed him up on it, though, too. You know, it's like,
well, Tom's, you know, he doesn't want to cause any trouble this week.
Exactly.
Jimmy, let me ask you a question about cameras. You know, your crack PR staff sends out the list of all the different sort of camera elements that will exist for this game. So there's 100 cameras, which, I mean, you can tell me at certain point, but obviously it's more than a regular season game, probably infinitely more. But, you know, you have things like there's 8 end zone pylon cams. There's ref cams, goalpost cams, goal line robotic cams, wireless cams. So from your position as the director, like let me ask this way. What does that mean for me as a viewer that you have all of these cameras at your disposal that you might not have during a regular season game?
So it comes down to officiating the game. At the end of the day, a lot of times television decides how a play goes one way or the other. So when you get to games of this magnitude, you have to add and have some specialty locations and camera positions to make sure that you set yourself up to give and provide the best replay looks if something were, you know, foot in, foot out, touchdown, interception, fumble, whatever it may be. And that's what a lot of these cameras, right? Like, yes, there are close to 100 cameras. I'm not looking at 100 cameras. No director in America could look at 100 cameras and cut a 100 camera show. But you do have a lot of extra stuff that actually does become part of your, you know, kind of line cut, I would say, what you actually get, you know, what you're seeing at home. With a lot of these extra things being, if this situation happens, the replay is probably coming from here and it's going to help us officiate this type of play. So you're covering all your boundary lines, goal lines, those sort of things. So a lot of that stuff I never even look at. I just make sure it's there, it's working, and it's there for replay purposes if we need it. But, you know, we do expand significantly the number of cameras that, you know, I have the ability to choose from to tell whatever story is going on within the body of the game.
So, you know, it's funny because people always ask me when we're doing these games, like, you know, how can you, like, all the replay sources that we have and stuff, like, is it more difficult or is it easier, like, than doing a regular season game where you have maybe half the equipment and stuff? But I always tell everybody that, like, you know, to Jimmy's point about officiating the game, that the more equipment you have, to me, the easier it is, because, you know, on smaller equipped games, you're missing stuff. And I'm not going to say that we might not miss stuff here. You know, hopefully we don't, knock on wood, but the more equipment you have, the less likely you're going to miss something. So you always have that needle in a haystack angle that you need to help officiate the outcome of the game. And, you know, that's another unique aspect of this game, that we have all this equipment, and hopefully, you know, this game will be covered like a glove, and we'll have every angle that we need to tell the story and to help officiate the game.
Jimmy, I want to stick with you here, and Bill, you feel free to sort of follow on this, because it obviously affects your position as well. One of the things about college football that actually makes it, that I shouldn't say actually, but that makes it great, is the crowd shots. It is a sport that really lends itself to, like, people in the crowd. You know, it's young people and they have a lot of expression and a lot of emotion. So you either get, like, the crying fan and that goes viral, or you get the celebratory fan that goes viral. Sometimes you get moments where it's like the coach's wife or girlfriend are in the stands, you know, brother or boyfriends, et cetera. Like, it just, again, it's like a sport that really plays to this, maybe about as much as any sport that's out there. Having talked to directors in the past, though, there's, like, that navigation. You don't want to, like, go too away from the field all the time. So you're sitting on the crowd, like, you know, you don't want to miss something that's on the field. So from your perspective as a director, and again, somebody who directed the NFL as well, how are you internally navigating that? Because it's a sport, again, where you might get one shot that could be, like, one of these shots that we see, you know, 20 years later, because it's very famous of a fan base, you know, crying at the end of a game or something like that.
I think it goes back to one simple philosophy I've had for a long time, is every shot has to have purpose within the moment. So you don't want to just cut a crowd shot or even a player shot or a coach shot if there's no purpose in the storyline of what's going on, right? So even if you have a great crowd shot and you're like, oh, that's great, but it doesn't fit the moment, you have to let it fall, right? We let so many things fall anyways because we're doing replays, have other things to show. Those things are great when you find them and they fit. But, you know, I think sometimes a lot of people chase trying to find that viral moment. And sometimes you miss out what's really important, which is what's on the field documentation wise. So I try to lean really heavily into that and just let that kind of be the guiding principle. And if the moment is right for a crowd shot and that happens to take legs in the Twitterverse, or X, or whatever the heck they call it, all great. But if it doesn't fit, you just got to let it go, and you got to stay with what matters. Because sometimes one shot for a little bit longer period of time will tell a much better story than something else. And you got to just kind of be, you know, guided by that little foundation there, and let that help you make your shot selections as you're going throughout the telecast.
Bill, do you have a philosophy on, as a producer, on how much to show a college football crowd?
You know, I totally agree with what Jimmy just said. I mean, as far as, like, you know, after a touchdown, we'd like to try to give Jimmy as much time as he can before we get to the replay. You know, normally if you're in a lucky situation and, you know, late in the game, you know, usually in the fourth quarter, we like to try to get all our commercial breaks in so we don't have to go to break after a touchdown. And I'll just let Jimmy cut around and wait for the extra point and then come back and replay after that. So I try to give Jimmy as much room as we can during the game to do shots like that. But he's always so great at that. You know, like he said, I mean, every shot he takes is for a purpose, and that's the right way to think about it and do it. So,
Bill, what is the advantage for a game like this of having two sideline reporters versus one? I will just sort of semi-answer it for you in the sense that, like, having talked to, again, many of your equivalents, you try to educate the public, but, you know, it's sometimes it's a tough one. So many reporters are your eyes and ears in the truck, and a lot of the stuff that they find never makes air, or it makes air through your broadcasters. So my one sense would be, it certainly just right, it gives you more coverage, right? It gives you two sidelines, and it just gives the production that much more eyes on the field than if it's one person there.
Yeah, so first and foremost, with big games like this, we interview both coaches. So we need a sideline reporter on each side of the field. I mean, during the season, you know, we just have Holly Rowe, and, you know, who's spectacular. You know, the A-plus benchmark for sideline reporters is Holly. So, I mean, you know, stuff that she gives us eyes and ears on the field, you know, comes in out of the Waller in the truck and right into Chris Fowler's ear a lot of times from me. So, but, you know, to go back to your question, so we have two sideline reporters for each side of the field, and, you know, it's a real help to have, you know, so obviously Holly will be with Michigan because she worked with Michigan at the Rose Bowl, and Molly will be with Washington because she was with Washington in New Orleans. So, you know, so it's great to have both of them, but, you know, they know going in that, you know, there's not going to be a ton of time for them. So we have a lot less like predetermined stories that we bring into the game. It's much more what you said, Richard, about eyes and ears on the bench, in the game, watching the game and reacting to what's happening on the field, and them passing that information along to us, and less about, you know, like prepackaged stories and stuff like that. There might be a couple here that are pertinent to the game, but we like to really keep it about the game.
Yeah, and obviously the game itself will dictate
exactly
some of that stuff, yeah, too, if it's a blow.
I always tell them, like you said, I mean, it's you know, we have to react to the game. We let the game come to us.
Right.
That's the key. Let the game come to you, and then you react and add your stuff around that.
Right, right. Yeah, it's 63-7 is a different broadcast than 24-21. That's just the realities of the production.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
All right, a couple more here. Jimmy, you can answer this as well. I'm sure Bill will chime in, because a lot of times it's usually in some booths it's just the producer who talks to the play-by-play person and the analyst. Sometimes it's both the director and the producer. Do Fowler and Herb Street want a lot of conversation from you two, or do they like to keep, as they say, traffic quiet? How do they prefer it?
I mean, for me, I've always thought my role to talk to announcers was as little as possible. So I try to avoid talking to them as much as I can. Now, there's some times where if, you know, let's say we're in a commercial break and you know, coach is talking to a player who maybe just made something, I'll put it online and just say, check your monitor or something quick like that. But I try to be super minimal in that regard. To me, that's Bill's lane.
So what about you, Bill?
I talk to them quite a bit, Richard. So, but when we hit commercial, I like them to talk to themselves and I listen to them because, you know, they have conversations that they want to have that they think are important about the last drive or the upcoming drive or elements and stuff like that, or like the direction of where we're going to go. So I like to listen to them. Herbie's pretty active in the talk back. You know, he and I are constantly, we've worked together for 20 years. So it's, you know, we kind of know each other, you know each other pretty well without having to talk. So I like to try to let them have conversations in commercial, and we kind of try to keep it quiet because we know each other so well by now. We've worked together so long. And, but when, you know, when we do need to talk, you know, we're definitely, in each other's ears and having conversations. So, but it's, you know, as I said, you know, with Herbie and I, we, and Chris as well. I mean, you know, we worked together so long. It's almost, through, you know, I don't know, what do they call it? Osmosis. Exactly.
Yeah,
that's the word I was trying to find. Yeah, exactly.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
All right, a couple more. The one follow-up on that, because that's interesting. When Herbstreit and Fowler are talking, can everyone hear that? Or is it everybody in the truck? Is it just two sideline reporters and you two guys? Or is everybody?
Yeah, everybody can hear it, except it doesn't go out on the bird.
Right, of course.
But everybody in the truck can hear it. And, you know, obviously when we're on the air, Herbie will hit the talk back, which only, you know, Jimmy and I and a couple people in the truck can hear.
Got it.
And Chris can hit the talk back too, and Holly and Molly as well. So, when they're talking in commercial, you know, we can all hear. And a lot of times, Richard, to be honest with you, I mean, what happens is, you know, they're looking out, you know, Holly or Molly might say something, you know, the coach might be talking to the defense, or, you know, Penix or JJ might be talking to their offensive line or something, and be say, hey guys, something's going on down there. You know, we should get a camera on that. And, you know, you're like, you know, Harbaugh is upset about something. He's talking to the official, you know, whatever it is. You know, we'll point the cameras and watch and have a conversation about that as well too. So I always tell everybody that, hey, look, you know, even though we're in commercial, we're still working. I mean, the cameras are working, trying to find stuff, and we're talking, and, you know, we don't take that time off. It's a time for us to get set and prepared for the next segment.
I got one historical one for Bill, and then we'll finish up on the current stuff. So the ESPN bio has something for you, Bill, in there, which I really liked. That actually, maybe they've done stories on this before, but I found this really interesting. So you were a runner for Gifford, Meredith, and Cosell when you first started out in the business. I don't know if you were in college still, but you're obviously very, very young at that. You know, this is essentially like an iconic booth. It probably would have been intimidating to be a very, very young person interacting with that booth, particularly Cosell, I would think. Do you have any story that stands out for you as someone who was a booth assistant, again, for one of the most iconic broadcasting trios that we've ever seen?
Yeah, so I was lucky enough in 1981 to be a runner as a freshman in college. And I was a runner for a Monday Night Football game. That's where I first started in network TV in Buffalo, New York. It was called then Rich Stadium. It was Buffalo against the Jets. And I was a booth runner for the stage manager in the broadcast booth. And it was, you know, Howard Cosell, Frank Gifford, and Don Meredith, the old classic team. And what was funny about it is I get there and I'm working, and for whatever reason, like Howard is so nice to me and Frank Gifford's so nice to me and Don, and, you know, they're almost like, you know, like I always thought the description of the job was I was a runner. I was supposed to get them stuff. And they're like, they're talking to me and say, hey, is there anything we can get? You know, I couldn't figure it out. Then the stage manager came over to me and started laughing and said, they think you're Runeology's son, Ben Arledge. actually, it was Rune Jr. They think you're Rune Jr. And I always thought that was hysterical. So, that was my first memory. My first job is that they, you know, thought I was Runeology's kid.
I love it.
Working in the booth. So they were treating me like gold, but, you know, it was such a thrill at that young age, you know, to work in such an iconic booth like that. And, you know, and even if they didn't think I was Runeology's son, they're just such great guys. And, you know, I had a chance to work with Frank Gifford quite a bit, later on in my career for Wide World of Sports and stuff like that. But, geez, what a way to break in your first network game to work with that iconic booth. That was a thrill for me personally. I love
that. Was that a paid gig or was that gratis?
Yeah, I think I got like $25 or whatever it was.
All right. You know, well, if we
fill out the tax form and all
I know.
That.
If we put that in 2023 terms, Bill, that's $125 maybe. That's not a bad night for an 18-year-old.
Exactly.
All right. And then Jimmy, I want to ask you one thing about last year. You were directing the game that DeMar Hamlin went down, correct?
Correct.
I have no idea if you read this or from me or not, but I was one of a group of people who really praised that broadcast for being incredibly judicious and thoughtful when it came to what they were putting out to the country, basically not speculating and just letting the pictures tell the story as opposed to speculation. You had a very significant role that night because it's your cameras that are focused on this stuff, and you had to make split second in real time decisions about how close to get, how not close to get. I know, again, you've done a lot of games, but I wonder if you could just reflect on that, because you have never had another night like that, I can guarantee, as a sports broadcaster director.
Yeah, and I hope I never see it again, ever. It goes without saying, but certainly, as Bill mentioned early in this podcast, that just spec the unexpected, right? Like, yes, do you think about and prepare for certain situations? Do you think about, you know, significant injury? Yes, but not of this magnitude, nor how it would kind of transpire and game would not be finished and played and how you kind of navigate that. And I try to go to really two frames of mind when something like that happens. My number one school of thought, you know, philosophically on how you do things is just to go slow. You're never in a hurry to get anywhere or go anywhere. So that's my first thing. The second thing I look at is, if that was someone I loved, how would I want it covered? So that's kind of the two frames of thought I put my head in as I'm making shot selections. Like, I don't need to be in a hurry. And if that's someone I care about, what images do I want to show or not show? And there was certainly a significant amount of things that we never showed for obvious reasons, but that we kept a camera on, which actually helped give us information to feed to the booth on things that were going on or have into our tape room should something, you know, else happen. So it's just those situations where, you know, you reflect on those two things. The Rose Bowl was the 1 year anniversary of that actually happening. And I even had brought it up in my camera meeting because we discussed, hey, if there's a significant injury, how are we going to do? And a lot of the women and men that were, on our crew at the Rose Bowl did that game as well with me. So it's just a reminder to all, like, you know, hey, if something does happen, A, you know what to do, but B, here's a reminder on what we need to make sure we do.
Yeah, no, as a viewer, I appreciated how you guys handled that in unforeseen, if not almost impossible circumstance.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, oh, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, last one for me. I'll start with you, Jimmy, and then you, Bill, can finish. I just want to ask you, Jimmy, what is success for you? If I was going to just say, what would be a successful broadcast on Monday night? And I'm intentionally leaving it open.
Just working to my level of excellence, right? Not going to be perfect, but can we be excellent? That's my goal. And not just me, right? Because we have a team of, you know, camera operators, graphics, tape, audio, all of us. We all have to be excellent. And I think it just starts with the tone you set and just kind of doing what you did week one and carrying that on through. So if we can, you know, rise to a level of excellence, knowing we won't be perfect, then we walk out of there going, you know what? We just put on a really nice telecast for those at home.
Same question for you, Bill.
I've never walked out of the truck saying, wow, that was a perfect broadcast. I wish I could. But that never happens. But I think success is not missing something that's, you know, important to the teams or the game that would take away from the moment of them winning the national championship. I think that would be success. And you know, I know that we're prepared, ready to go, and we'll do everything in our power to have a great broadcast. So, I also want to wish Jimmy a happy birthday, Richard.
Oh, wow.
He's celebrating his birthday today, so I know he's going to be mad at me for
where's Jimmy, all the presents and
presents? Yeah, I know. Jimmy, I can't believe you you've decided to spend your birthday with this podcast.
Isn't that what you do as you get older, right?
Yeah, exactly. Birthdays are. Yeah, exactly. Right. Is there anything else that you guys wanted to add that I didn't ask you? I should say, I mean, if you want to sort of, is this venue unique for you two in any way, in whether it's camera positions, whether it's, I don't know, a modern stadium, but it feels like you've worked in all of these stadiums and they usually are all kind of uniquely workable, right, for your kind of production?
Yeah, it's an NFL stadium, so it's set up like everything we're used to. So there's nothing really out of the norm or challenging or difficult from that standpoint.
Can I make one pitch, Richard, though?
Sure, please.
And I'm with Herbie on this. Let's have every national championship game at the Rose Bowl.
I'll second that.
Yeah. Well, as Jimmy, for both of you, as a person who works in images, there's no better image than the sun going down at the Rose Bowl in – you can maybe record argue in sports. And then obviously it's God. So historic.
At 2 o'clock, you know, and I'm talking Pacific time, 2 o'clock is a perfect time to kick at the Rose Bowl because by the third quarter, you're talking about magic hour in the San Gabriel Mountains. And, you know, when it's a game like we had, you know, last Monday, it's just what a great place. And the Rose Bowl people are so great to work with. And it's such a great stadium and such a great look. It's just, let's have every national championship game. Let's make the Rose Bowl the national championship game every year.
Listen, Bill, it's a great pitch, but you're probably going to run into some issues with your sales and programming department because there is a reason that games, as you both know, are in prime time. But yeah, that is a beautiful when you see that setting, particularly as the sun's going down, you think college, like it brings you back to Keith Jackson and all these like iconic college football moments. And I agree with you both. I'm sort of even going through my head. I mean, you know, Notre Dame Stadium is sort of iconic and interesting, and obviously the Army Navy games are amazing. But I think that's the best venue for college football at that time. So I wish that could be the case. I think maybe your semifinals though could maybe always once upon a time be there. That's possible, it feels like, right?
I think the quarterfinals next year.
Quarterfinals next year? Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Semifinals a little later in January.
Burke Magnus and Jamie Pitard, they're going to have you do all 12 games, guys. They're just
I'm ready. Let's go.
Fly on the Concorde to get to make sure that you make all these venues. All right. Let me give these guys brief their bios, although not very brief. But Bill Bonnell is the coordinating producer of ESPN, and again, he's the lead producer for ESPN's national championship game. He is the producer for ABC Saturday Night Football. Essentially, is does all their major games, although ESPN actually has a lot of major games, so it's not always just one team. And Jimmy Platt will be directing his first college football national championship, which is pretty awesome after his very distinguished career. And as I mentioned at the top, he was on Monday Night Football and has done all sorts of sports, from men's and women's college basketball to MLB to the NFL. Jimmy and Bill, thank you very much for giving me some time. I know this is a very, very busy week for you guys, but I appreciate what you do. And there are a lot of people out there interested in it. You have very unique jobs. You know, it's, while most people will sort of like, you know, recognize, oh, is Chris Fowler's done his this many national championships, or oh, Kirk Herbstreit does this many, you know, you guys are one of the few people on earth who have been able to produce and direct a college football national championship game. That is a number under 20, like lifetime. So it's pretty, it's pretty cool to, for you guys to give me a sense of your experience. And thank you very much for joining me today on the Sports Media Podcast.
Thank you, Richard, for having us. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Richard. It's always great spending time with you. Thank you.
All right, back in the studio. My thanks to Bill and Jimmy. They're excellent, unsurprisingly so. And you'll be watching them in action in the National College Football Championship. I expect it to be a very good game. You're listening to this before the game is over. I think it's going to be tight. I think Michigan will win, but I think it's going to be a tight game. Prior to these gentlemen, Hubie Brown, who was an absolute treat on this broadcast, the ESPN NBA analyst, we had a roundtable with Chad Finn and Austin Karp about 2024 sports media predictions. Richie Zions and Rich Russo, Fox's top producer and director for the NFL, were on this podcast on December 21st. So we're getting some behind-the-scenes people in the business, which I think, as you know, I love. Fabian Ardaya was on this podcast to talk about what it's like when Shohei Ohtani comes to your team. Laura Rutledge on this podcast in December, as well as Ernie Johnson of Warner Brothers Discovery / Turner. Again, if you like these kind of conversations, please leave us a review and a nice note. That is how this podcast continues. I want to thank Patrick Antonetti for all his hard work. Thanks to everybody at Odyssey for their support. And thank you for listening. We'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.